Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street, our 199th episode.
Wow.
And we begin today with an apology. We know the sound was all fucked up last week. Katie Gibbons has been let go from the show.
Oh, that hurts.
Replaced on an interim basis, trial basis, by her husband, Shane. Shane, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you. My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
I actually am a successful restaurateur and lawyer.
Shane Gibbons, everybody. No, we're kidding. Katie has not been let go. She had some school stuff to,
we would never
to deal
let
with
her go.
Today. But we did screw up the sound last week.
That was my fault.
I thought it was my fault.
It was both of our fault.
Fine. Anyway, we've got that fixed. It's our 199th episode ever.
Ever. 199.
We've got something special planned for you next week, so.
Can't wait.
So hang around for that.
Yeah.
Or come back for that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, here's one thing I want to talk about. Can I talk about this?
Absolutely.
Shane, we have a guy sitting here today.
Yeah.
We've had him on before. You've heard him before. Mm-hmm. Who wrote the song we use for our intro.
That's right.
And as we exit, Shane, do you want to tell us a little bit about that song?
I've asked him that before, and he has said no, but
oh,
go
he
for
doesn't
it.
Want to. You don't have to. I just thought you might want to say
I sure can, Kelly.
Oh
no.
It's going to be a little off the rails today, everybody. Shane is running the board, so we don't know what's going to happen, really.
No, that's so sad.
No, I'm not going to use it.
Save Hubert the Hamster for when we go back to Corner Bar Live at Easy Street, which is coming up soon, right? We're going to do that soon.
Yeah, in the spring.
Okay.
I'm trying to get a little closer to time that Jake's open so he would have a reason to come back, because I don't think Jake wants to come back.
I got you. Yeah, Jake Graves has to. Jake's on the
Jake
Lake
listens,
is not
so.
A sponsor of the show, but they could be.
Yeah, they'll never be.
I know.
Now, does Jake listen? I doubt it.
He used to. Yeah. I don't know if he still does.
Well, Jake, if you're listening, you know this as well as I do. You really don't stick with things very well like this.
Yeah. I can't believe the restaurant's been around as long as it has.
Jake's schedule is too tight for like every Wednesday.
He's busy.
You can see him petering out at the end. He's just like, man.
Yeah. Yeah, his eyes kind of glaze over.
Anyway, The Legend of Hannah Brady is the name of that song,
yeah.
And it was on our actually recorded album. We did two albums. One we did ourselves, which was, we actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah,
and then the second one was done in Nashville at a, you know, real recording studio and funded by Zeus Country in Nashville. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Great.
That one, that's story is a dream that I had, and I woke up and wrote it down. But it's about, I don't know, I had this dream where this shack in the woods and this old timey couple lived there, and one of them cheated on the other one, and then he ended up shooting those two and himself. It's a great true crime podcast.
That's what I was going to say. It's perfect. If
it's
you've
perfect.
Never listened to the entire song, you can get it. You can download it on Spotify or Apple iTunes.
Yes.
I'm sure if you want to hear the whole song, because we never play the entire song.
No, because we want you to go to Spotify or iTunes and see for yourself and check out the whole album.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
But it actually is a true crime story.
But the thing that
it's a crime story.
When I write songs, which I do in spells, I'll leave a notebook beside my bed because, you know, in the middle of the night, sometimes you just have an idea.
Yeah.
I have my best ideas in the middle of the night.
And I write it down. And this is what I had. I woke up and I wrote down three shots rang across the valley as three vessels. No, three souls lifted to heaven as three vessels fell to the ground.
Now, how about that?
So that was the.
I love your lyrics
in
your songs. Kevin and I have talked about that a lot.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
We have.
All right. Well.
Not that we talk about you all the time, Shane. No,
of,
I don't want you to think
please,
we just sit
his
at home.
His head will
and
barely fit in the room as it is.
No, I mean, I just didn't want him to be like paranoid, like, God, all they do is talk about me. But no, we've talked about your lyrics and
well,
how good they are.
That.
I think everybody who's listening should check that out.
Yeah,
check out Shane Gibbons Band.
Hey, listen, there's plenty of room to download
now,
it.
Now, wait a minute. Aren't you guys going to do a reunion
concert
we're doing, sometime this
well,
spring?
Well, it's the, I call it the SGB Classic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me and David Sanford and Charlie Freeman and Josh Griffith, which is the old.
Yeah.
That's the original
piece,
bunch.
The Four,
you know,
Horsemen.
Piano.
Yeah.
Jerry Lee Lewis stuff. Mm-hmm. That is May 16th.
Perfect.
There we go.
May 16th.
Yeah,
May
this
on,
is a great show.
On that's Easy Street.
A Friday or Saturday night, whatever that falls on, at Easy Street Restaurant, Bar, and Performance Hall in Center, Alabama, right across the street from where we are recording in the Katie Beth Gibbons studio today.
Yeah, I can see Easy Street from here.
And the new sign that says additional parking in the back. I wanted it to say original parking in the rear, and Shane shot that down.
I was like, no, Riz. No, so he's like, just try to stop me.
I don't like the phrase
I'm pay
in
for
the
it.
Rear.
I know, parking in the rear. Oh, God. Yeah. You got liquor in the front?
No.
Poker in the back?
Yikes.
Poker in the rear, liquor in the rear. Oh, God.
All right, so.
That's going to get.
Yeah, that probably will. That. I have a shout down.
Oh, I love those.
Well, in addition to Shane, who never listens unless he's on the podcast, I was sitting at the bar down the street yesterday with Katie Beth's BFF, Brooke Rogers.
Hey, Brooke. Oh, yeah.
No, you don't have to say hey.
Oh, don't
her.
Say hey, Brooke.
No, no, she doesn't listen to the show. So shout down to Brooke.
Shout down.
But I didn't know
Katie
y'all at Easy Street.
We were not at Easy Street, so I think I'm about to get shouted down. The bad news about
not
today's
cool.
show is that Shane knows what all the other buttons on the board do.
Yeah, we get
Katie
the full,
doesn't fuck with those
we
because
get
we don't need
the full service today, yeah. Sound effects and all. Yeah. Exciting.
You mean the full treatment right. is more like it, and not the good kind.
So, yeah. Okay. Knowing that I know all the sounds, I'm going to pitch it to Kelly yeah. Turner, who's yeah. got the lead today. Is that right?
Yep.
Hold on. Kelly,
oh,
go ahead.
Thank you so Swell. Much. All right. Okay, so you don't know who we're talking about based on the title
okay,
today.
And you want Shane and I to play a little game.
Today's title is just episode 199.
I like
so,
it.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So,
very
yeah,
interesting.
I'm going to go through some... Let me start with a disclaimer.
It's like song 6 on the Green Day album.
Yes.
Yeah.
There should I should have put the disclaimer at the beginning, but okay. I didn't. Disclaimer: this is you know, this is
sensitive.
A rough one. Yeah, it's okay. A rough one. A lot of victims. I'm going to start going over some of our victims, and the moment that you know who we are talking about, mm-hmm. just keep that in your mind.
Okay.
And we'll see. We're going to see how well you know your true crime. I'm sure everybody will get it eventually.
Okay.
Who we're talking about.
As I said earlier, I'm Jon Snow.
You are
here.
Jon Snow. So I'm trying to decide glasses on or off, as you know, I always do, Scott.
Yeah,
and so
no.
I think I'm just going to do this because I can't look at y'all. I can't see y'all with my glasses on, unconscious. She was then.
I got it.
You got it. And Scott already raised his hand. Yeah. So you already know who we're talking about. Yeah. All right. So here we go. You guys know your true crime.
Didn't you just tell me who it
was? I didn't. Oh. She was then dressed in blue jeans, a white blouse and boots, and carried away. Linda Ann was driven to a secluded area where she was raped and murdered. Her body was dumped out in the secluded area. And 14 months after her disappearance, her skull and jawbones were found on Taylor Mountain, about an hour's drive from her home. March 12, 1974, Donna Gail Manson, a 19-year-old student at Evergreen State College, south of Seattle, disappeared on her way to a campus concert. Her body was never found. April 17, 1974, 18-year-old Susan Elaine Rancourt disappeared on Central Washington State College's campus. At 8 p.m. on the 17th, she put a load of laundry in the washing machine, headed to her regular dorm advisor's meeting. She planned to see a German film with a friend afterwards, but no one saw her after the meeting. Her clothes remained in the washing machine until a frustrated student took them out and put them in a heap on the table. Her disappearance prompted a massive search with no results. May 6, 1974. Roberta Kathleen Parks disappeared somewhere between her dorm room at Oregon State and a coffee shop where her friends were waiting to meet her. Authorities later learned that a man persuaded her to go with him to a bar. After they got into his car, he tied and gagged Parks and drove her back to Washington to be killed, raping her twice on the way. Investigators later discovered her skull, among many others, at Taylor Mountain in Washington. June 1, 1974, Brenda Carol Ball, age 22, disappeared after leaving the Flame Tavern in Buren near Seattle. It's also near the Seattle-Tacoma airport.
All right.
Ball was taken to a residence by a man where they had, quote, consensual sex, end quote, before he strangled her while she was sleeping. But she also had damage to her skull, so she wasn't just strangled. In the early hours of June 11th, 1974, 18-year-old University of Washington student George Ann Hawkins vanished while walking down a brightly lit alley between her boyfriend's dorm and her residence hall. The next morning, three Seattle homicide detectives and a criminologist combined. They searched the entire alleyway and found nothing. Investigators will later learn that she was lured to a man's car and knocked unconscious with a crowbar. After handcuffing her, he drove her to Issaquah, a suburb 20 miles east of Seattle. Did I say that name right?
Issaquah? I think so.
Issaquah. Where he strangled her and spent the entire night with her body. Investigators from Seattle and King County grew increasingly concerned. There was no significant physical evidence, and the missing women had little in common except similarity, young, attractive, white college students with long hair parted in the middle. Authorities did piece together some interesting details from several witnesses. Some of the girls were seen talking to a man with his arm in a sling and struggling with a stack of books. July 14th, 1974, Janice Ott and Denise Naslund were kidnapped on the same day from a lake. It was a state park in Issaquah, which is about a 20-minute drive east of Seattle. Happened in broad daylight. Later, witnesses report that a man with his left arm in a sling had approached them. He introduced himself as Ted and asked for help rigging his sailboat to his car. Shane's got it now. One young woman initially obliged, but when she got to the Volkswagen Beetle, there was no sailboat. And he said, oh, I forgot to tell you, it's at my folks' house, just to jump up the hill. And he said it in a slight British accent. So when he motioned to the passenger door, she took off running.
Good for her.
And then a little later, she saw another woman walking beside him in a conversation on the way to the parking lot. Now, with this, the police finally had a description of a possible suspect. The woman described the man as having sandy blonde hair, 5'10", 160 pounds, and he had a brown VW bug. And then they created a sketch based on that. And they were looking for Theodore Robert Cowell, also known as Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
And we'll tell you all about it after a word from our sponsors.
Hello, Cherokee County. If you are looking for a health option where the staff makes you feel like family, then you don't have to look any further than Cherokee Family Healthcare.
Cherokee Family Healthcare treats patients of all ages with emphasis on personalized care. Call 256-266-1021 to schedule an appointment or just walk right into the office at 819 West Main Street in Center. That's right across from the post office. If you're not feeling well, do that and let them get you returned to good health.
They offer primary care health services, urgent care, DOT physicals, weight loss, IV hydration. You can get same-day appointments, and walk-ins are welcome. Like I said, just give them a call at 256-266-1021. They're at 819 West Main Street in Center. That's like kind of right across from the post office.
Right across.
You can't miss it.
Katie and Kelly, let me tell you guys a quick story. Recently, I was dining at Easy Street, and I met a man who told me that he and his wife were planning to retire soon to the Weiss Lake area from out of state. I told him that the best person for him to call to help him find a home in the area is Greg Oliver. Greg is the owner and broker at Go Realty. And if you're like the man that I met who is thinking of moving here, or if you're looking for property or a home anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, you should call Greg Oliver at 256-504-3847. Greg has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he is ready to help you find exactly what you're looking for. Greg has 25 years of experience in the real estate market, and you can see a complete list of his current properties by visiting gregoliverweisslake.com. So visit the website or call Greg at Go Realty today. The number is 256-504-3847.
Hey, true crime fans. It's time to start planning your 2025 summer vacation. And why not take it right here in Cherokee County, Alabama?
We have a ton of things to do here in Cherokee County. You can wet a hook in Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, take in the breathtaking views at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the National Preserve at Little River Canyon, enjoy an all-day splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and there's so much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of lodgings, RV sites, kayak rentals, and campgrounds, and they're all anxious to meet your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come stay with us this summer from wherever you are. Plan your Northeast Alabama summer staycation by visiting cherokee-chamber.org.
Thank you to our sponsors. Kelly, you were just about to, well, you did reveal.
Yep.
But you're going to tell us a little bit more about Ted Bundy.
Today, that's who we're discussing for episode 199. Bundy was born November.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
But what his real name was what?
Theodore Robert Cowell.
Okay. So he changed it.
It was changed for him.
Oh.
I'll let you know.
No, okay. Yeah. I never knew that.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
He had a totally different last
name. I didn't know that.
He had three last names, but finally Bundy was the last one.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No. I love the discussion and the questions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So y'all interrupt whenever.
We're
good. All right. So he was born November 24th, 1946 at a home for unwed mothers in Vermont.
Mm.
He stayed there about 2 months after his birth. His mother, Louise Cowell, considered placing him up for adoption, but her father eventually talked her into bringing the baby back home to Philadelphia. And so he grew up the first part of his life thinking that Louise was his sister. She was actually his mother.
Right.
And then his grandparents, he thought they were his parents. Bundy's grandmother suffered from depression and agoraphobia. And his grandfather had been described as having a raging temper.
Now, agoraphobia, that's the fear of crowds, right?
Yeah. Okay. Going out in big open spaces and crowds. Yeah.
Hmm.
When Bundy was 3 years old, he and Louise left Philadelphia for Tacoma, Washington. She changed his last name to Nelson, so she didn't draw attention to his illegitimacy.
Okay.
Mm.
And she was how old? Did you say that? I forgot.
I didn't. Okay. I don't know how old she was.
But obviously pretty young.
Yeah. She always said his father was a serviceman, but she never said who.
Like a military or...
Like a military.
Dishwashers.
No, like a military man, okay. Like in the service. Right. Yeah. Army man, Navy man, something like that. Yeah. He didn't like the move. He wanted to be back in Philadelphia and just got more and more upset as his mother became involved with a man named Johnny Bundy, who was an Army hospital cook.
Hmm.
Louise and Johnny married in 1951. Ted was very jealous.
So he was 5 years old.
He would pitch tantrums, especially in public, and wet his pants and do a big display, fits.
Like Riz.
He beat me to it. I was about to accuse Shane of the same thing.
Yep. Now, despite all the outbursts and jealousy, Johnny Bundy did end up adopting young Ted.
Okay.
And that's how he got the last name Bundy.
Okay.
relations between Ted and his stepfather were always tense. Ted was materialistic. He wanted expensive clothes and a lot of things that Johnny couldn't provide. He's a working class guy.
Yeah.
And he also claimed that Johnny was really stupid. He always insulted the intellect of his stepfather. Mm. And he would try to provoke him a lot. And sometimes he would succeed, sometimes he wouldn't. So I think Johnny was a pretty good guy.
He's otherwise normal guy.
Yes, like, yeah. And just has this brat that he now has to deal with.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny and Louise went on to have four more children of their own, and Ted just even more jealous and more ostracized. He always resented not knowing his real father, and a friend once tried to comfort him about this, and he said, well, you know, it's not you that's the bastard. Always resented that.
Yeah.
A lady named Sandy Holt, who grew up with Bundy, said that he was teased for having a little bit of a speech impediment, and he couldn't keep up with his fellow students sometimes. It's a different thing. Like, he was in the Boy Scouts and just didn't advance as much as the other Boy Scouts.
You know, it's weird how many serial killers were Boy Scouts.
Oof.
Or Eagle Scouts.
Yikes. Well, but I don't think Bundy was an Eagle Scout. He was just
motivation to become an Eagle Scout.
No, and some of this is from biography.com where it says Bundy wasn't a bad athlete, but he didn't make the school basketball or baseball teams, and he had a problem with that. He didn't like that failure. He was a loner at school. He just said, he only went on one date. He just kind of said, I disliked women or were afraid of them. It was just I didn't really seem to have an inkling as to what to do about them.
Oh, hear, hear.
End quote.
I went to school with a guy a lot like that, and he ended up being one of the guys that committed the murder at Yellow Creek.
Yikes. Now, there is a story from where Bundy was about 3 years old. Louise's sister woke up to the three-year-old placing knives around her. Like, just he had gotten the knives out of the kitchen cabinet and was, she woke up and they were laying all around her and this three-year-old standing there.
Like that Knives Out movie poster.
Kind of like, yeah. And she thought that was really strange and odd people should take a look at this. Yeah. But she said, you know, no one else in the family really said anything about it. Yeah. They didn't really do anything about it.
And that only because he didn't have any cats to murder, probably, because so far you're checking the boxes for potential future serial killer.
Correct.
Yeah. Did he have any cats in the freezer?
He did not.
That's a clear
interesting
sign.
Yeah.
Moving along.
That's a big red flag.
All red flag to that one.
Okay, as far as academics, you know, he was okay. He wasn't a great student. He wasn't a terrible student. I always think that Bundy thought he was a lot smarter than what he actually was.
Yeah.
He tried to present himself as what, but he's just pretty average. He did have a few times of normalcy where he had some friends and he had a job delivering newspapers and cutting grass, and he went to church and became the Methodist Youth Fellowship's vice president.
Oh, God. So seemingly normal.
Right.
Young.
He even
adulthood.
He even saved the life of a friend's niece who was drowning. Like, he saved her life. Okay. So he did have, you know, some times where he wasn't just all bad.
Some redeeming qualities.
Sure, but
not enough.
That's about
those kind of got buried though.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
A fellow Boy Scout remembered Bundy coming from behind to hit him over the head with a stick. Now, that's not good.
Was it a broomstick?
And I was about to say, this is mirroring the life of Scott Ryan, by the way.
And then childhood acquaintances said that he liked to come up and scare people. He had a fondness for digging holes in the ground, putting stakes inside, and covering them with vegetation. And one girl fell in and actually hurt her leg in one of his, quote, tiger traps.
I was about to say, that's a tiger trap.
Yeah.
That's, you know, where they teach you to make those in the Boy Scout.
Oh, yeah. So there you go.
He, you know, like you're, that in. And that's what you're in the wilderness and you're trying to, you know, catch food for survival.
Those those are the booby traps the Vietnamese used, the Viet Cong and the Vietnam War.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They used bamboo, sharpened bamboo sticks.
He would do that randomly in the woods and actually trapped a girl. So he was violent to animals.
Yep. Here we go.
It wasn't really, I don't think cats, it was rats.
Oh, well.
He would buy mice at the local pet store and play God. So what he'd do, he would corral them all in one area, and then he had fun deciding which to kill and which to spare. You know, that's how he would call play God. So he had fun with that.
Did his family know about this?
These are some things.
These are probably some of the things he admitted to after they caught him.
He admitted to some of these things. Some of these are acquaintances that kind of knew him and would hear him talk about things. The problem with Bundy and an interview with Bundy is you have no idea what's true and what's not. In one interview, he'll say one thing. In another one, he'll say something completely different. Mm. So I don't go on his reports of himself a whole lot. Because he's a big liar.
He's a narcissist.
And a manipulator. Was. And whatever he thinks, he plays the interviewer a lot. So he was at least intelligent enough to do that.
Charles Manson did that famously.
Yeah. So he enjoyed the detective fiction stories that had all the gore and the depictions of rape and murder. And he would sometimes masturbate inside closets at his junior high school, and he'd get caught from time to time doing that. That's reported from people who went to school from him. So, how many red flags have we counted? Missed a red flag?
I think we're out of red flags.
I think he set the standard for red flags.
I wonder, did John Douglas ever interview him?
No, I'm not aware.
Our good friend
of.
John Douglas at the FBI.
I don't know. He was interviewed by a lot of people. I know. One person who interviewed him quite a bit said that when you were around Ted that much and interviewed him and got into his world, he said you were quote tainted. Like it stuck to you. And he said it was several years after Ted was dead before he finally
washed
felt
off.
Rid of it.
And Bundy may have come along before They started the behavioral sciences unit at the FBI.
This is 70s,
right?
Right.
When that happened.
Those first round of victims I talked about were in the early 70s.
Yeah.
John Mulaney had a bit where he was like, I wanted to be a cop back in the...
in the 40s, before there was DNA evidence.
It was like, oh, look at all this blood. Gross. Clean it up.
Yeah. Now, back to my hunch.
Back
to work. Clean all this mess up. Quick.
Right.
Get a mop.
Yuck.
We'll draw a chalk outline around the body. Yeah. That way we'll know where it was.
Right. So Ted, you know, he also starts breaking the law. He was a really good skier, but he couldn't afford the equipment, so he would shoplift the ski equipment.
Right.
He would forge lift tickets. Let's be honest, lift tickets are ridiculously expensive.
Well, you're talking lift tickets
to go skiing. They're ridiculous.
I mean, that's your admission to the ski slope is your
and you buy them. You can buy half a day, a whole day, a week, whatever. Mm. But they're too much.
I will be the guy sitting at the fireplace in the lodge having a drink while you idiots are up on the mountain freezing your ass off.
After I blew my knee out last time I went, because I at 40-something went up on the mountain and tried to ski like I was 30-something, blew my knee out first run. Didn't even finish it.
Yeah.
Man. So
so you're the person by the fireplace at the lodge.
Yes, I
for
was.
The rest of the trip.
And will be.
Well, I would have been right there with you.
Forever and ever, that's where I'll be. I'll never do that again. Now, as a teen, he attempted to steal a car, but he got caught. And he was just kind of let off with a warning. Mm-hmm. Don't do that again.
Right.
Bundy became a peeping Tom and liked to spy on strangers.
We're already out of red flags, Kelly.
Sorry. Yeah.
Keep going.
Okay. He is suspected of earlier murders, possibly 8-year-old Anne Marie Burr, who disappeared from her Tacoma home in the middle of the night, August 31st, 1961. Bundy was 14 at the time.
I was going to say.
Yeah. He lived a few miles away from the household, and they think that maybe he was spying on the home and saw an opportunity. Clues left at the Burr home were an open window, a footprint, an unlocked front door, and her family always insisted that she knew her abductor, and they believe that she had met Ted in the neighborhood. Well, he delivered the paper to everybody, so they knew who he was.
So she would have recognized his face.
Yeah, he also had an uncle that kind of lived near there, and he never admitted to this murder. And even up till the day or before he died, Anne-Marie's mother wrote him letters asking for closure, and he never would. Mm. He never said anything. He always denied this particular murder.
Well, maybe even Ted Bundy was ashamed of that one.
He might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. They did find DNA evidence at the scene, but it wasn't enough to do anything with. And I think.
Yeah.
All right. Ted graduated high school in 1965. He first jumped around from college to college. He'd drop out. Then he jumped from job to job. He first started out with a major in Chinese.
Xing Xing.
Yeah, what a major.
An odd choice.
It is an odd choice.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he lived on the West Coast, right, at that point. Mm-hmm. So there's an Asian community on the West Coast. So
I mean, and I don't really know. I don't know what he wanted to do with it.
Right.
But that was his first major. But he would jump around, and then he just dropped out and had, you know, minimum wage job after minimum wage job.
Jobs, right.
And at this point in time, he began a relationship. It would end. This was with Diane Edward. They met at the University of Washington, and he said that Diane was the only woman he ever loved.
Hmm.
Diane ended their relationship, saying she was tired of his immaturity and lack of goals. So, Diane, you dodged something there.
Good work, Diane.
Wow. Well, now, was he killing people while he was with her?
No, not at this point. Okay.
Because the first victim on your list earlier was from 74.
74.
January
it was just
of 74.
Just about every month.
Yeah.
There was at least one or two more.
Once he broke the seal.
Oh, it was on.
Stop.
I mean, that was it. Yeah. So then Ted travels around and eventually found his love for porno in New York City. He liked to watch porno. He wasn't in porno.
What is this?
What is what?
Porno.
Yes. See, they used to be able to go to theaters and watch pornographic films in New York City.
Times Square area before Rudy Giuliani came along and cleaned it up in the 80s.
Yep.
It was the red light district in New York City.
Still yeah. not following. Is this a type of entertainment?
It is. Oh, yes. Some. Okay. Some.
I'll
people.
Show you on my phone after the show, Shane.
I know nothing about it. I don't.
And the more violent the porno, the more Ted liked it.
Okay.
So he enjoyed that quite a bit. Now, eventually, in 1970, he got a little more focused and goal oriented, and decided to re-enroll in the University of Washington. This time, he was a psychology major,
and he was 24 at the time.
Maybe yeah. do the math.
Yeah, 24.
He became an honor student and was he was people loved him. In 1971, he took a job at Seattle Suicide Hotline Crisis Center.
Good Lord.
Irony of ironies.
And there he met Anne Rule, a former yeah. Seattle police officer, an aspiring crime writer who would later write one of the biographies, like the biography on Ted Bundy.
Was the Stranger Beside Me?
That is the name of it. Yeah. She at first saw nothing disturbing in his personality at all and said he was very kind and empathetic. And have you guys ever worked at anything like this?
What, a crisis hotline?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so, all right. I'm a psychology major right. and also worked at a crisis yeah. hotline.
Yeah. yeah.
And you get, if you were like me, the way your schedule ran and you got the late shift, oh, the calls were so different.
Oh, I bet.
My time frame was 9 p.m. to midnight.
Oh, that's the juicy time, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. You have no idea the kinds of calls that I got. I got several that were kind of disturbing, but you could brush off.
Yeah.
But I only got one that really freaked me out and still freaks me out to this day. And I swear to you, if I heard this man's voice, I would recognize it even at 45 years old. I get this call, this guy, and he was a regular caller there for a while. He would call
to the suicide prevention.
I would look
like
through
it was a radio show.
I would look through the books and notice that he got to where he only called during my shift mm-hmm. at some point.
Okay.
And we would talk a little bit and then I would end the call and all right, I gotta go. But one night he said to me, he said, "Is it scary there by yourself?"
Oh no.
And I said, "I'm not alone, totally alone."
Right.
On this random house on a random road near the railroad tracks in Auburn. And then, you know, when
that's
the train goes by, oh, my God, it was on the end of this creepy street. It was ridiculous.
And on top of everything else, he can figure out where you are.
Oh, sure.
Because he hears the train go by.
Oh, sure. Sure. And he says this to me. He says, "I want to know what you look like on the inside."
On the inside.
You can take that so many ways. Oh, and I said, "I am terminating this call."
Yeah.
Because you had to say, they were like, "You have to say, I'm terminating this call." So I terminated the call. He tried to call back. I left that night a little before midnight with that phone still ringing. And
oh.
it was one of those
oh
like
my God.
Old brown phones.
Yeah.
So you know that ring. Like when a stranger calls. Yeah.
Then he jumps off the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rattles every time it rings.
Yeah. We nicknamed him the Fantasizer.
That was, yeah. That was vanilla.
It
Are there any
was
unsolved serial
terrifying
in the Auburn area?
I don't know.
Oh,
maybe.
I'm sure.
But
sure.
Anyways, I digress. That was
no,
that was freaky.
Wow, that's creepy. You need to send that into Rainn Wilson.
No.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing.
Very creepy. So anyways, Ted worked at one of these, but they liked him. They didn't see anything
yeah.
wrong
well,
with
that's,
him.
Well, that's
was good
another
at,
that's another classic characteristic of a serial killer.
Yeah.
He gets along great. Everybody thinks he's fine. I can't believe it was that guy.
Right.
You know, that's what you hear about him all.
Right. He was very charming. Could
yeah.
be very charming.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted, people tend to think Ted wasn't a bad-looking guy. I see Ted knowing who Ted Bundy is.
Yeah.
So I don't think like that. But
yeah.
if you don't know who Ted Bundy is, you might think he's an okay. It kind of looks like, who's the, was it Joe on Wings? You remember the show Wings?
Yeah, sure.
He kind of looks like the guy that played Joe.
Did we had what's his name play him on that series?
That,
and
oh, is that Zac Efron?
Yeah, but didn't the guy from Wings play him in a movie?
Possibly,
I
they
think
look
he did.
Very similar.
Very similar.
I mean, he's a nice looking guy.
Yeah,
he doesn't look like a serial killer.
No,
if you don't know it.
Right.
Lily
right.
Collins played Anne Rule in that series that where Zac Efron played mm-hmm. Bundy, and it's, I think it's on Netflix. I forget the title of the series.
I'm going to tell you.
Oh, great. Yep. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, it's fine. Okay. It's got a very distinct title based on what a judge said to him.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of movies about Ted and books.
I didn't watch it.
Anyways.
Katie tried to get me to, I'd watch a little, and I'm like, nah, this is not.
Yeah.
I don't.
Zac Efron, he is not. Let me just say that. Now, not present day Zac. This Zac Efron that's on the show. I haven't seen an updated picture of Zac Efron's. I don't know what he looks like now. But
yeah.
Anyways.
He's probably looking like a Russell Crowe outside smoking a cigarette.
Okay. All right.
You used to come on.
40 like, pounds overweight.
A few years after the first Gladiator, they're taking pictures of him outside like, the studio smoking his beer belly.
And they're talking about his dad bod. Yeah.
I can't wait till Zac Efron looks like that, by the way. Good looking punk.
Yeah. How dare
I hope you're
he.
Listening, Zach.
Right.
I don't know. I'd probably like him.
Probably. He seems like a nice dude.
Yeah, but Ted Bundy seemed like one too, though.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So while working at this hotline, the Seattle Police Department even nominated Ted to be the director of the Seattle Crime Prevention Advisory Committee.
Boy, that came back to bottom. I mean,
they were sorry about that.
That came back up, I'm sure. Yes. Meeting. Hey, guys.
Holy shit. Look what we did 10 years ago.
How did we miss this one? Yeah.
And in the meantime, all of these murders that I talked about at the beginning occur.
Right.
And then the sketch comes out.
Okay.
And Ann Rule sees this and reports it to the police. This looks like the guy that works with me.
Well, she just had to like look over her shoulder, right?
Hey. I mean, like, holy crap, that looks like him.
Didn't they work at the police department? Is that what you were saying? Or?
She was, She was now getting into, she wanted to be a writer, crime writer.
I got you.
Yeah, but she had worked at the police department. So she tells them, okay, you guys need to look at my colleague, Ted. And they did note that he drove a bronze Volkswagen Bug.
Ding. Uh-huh.
But they didn't follow up. I mean, that's Ted.
There can't be a lot of those out there.
And,
I don't know.
And this is Ted.
Maybe?
Come on.
Yeah.
The good guy.
Everybody had a Volkswagen Beetle in the 70s, but that color still sounds a little unique.
Yeah. All right. So Ted was accepted to the University of Utah as a law student. And in August of 1974, remember, he was busy in 74.
Yeah. Yeah, because the first murder was January. Then you said February, March,
all
May.
The way through July.
Yeah. Okay.
Then he goes to Utah as a law student and moved there.
Okay.
In August. On October 2nd, 1974, 16-year-old cheerleader Nancy Wilcox went out to buy a pack of gum and vanished. Witnesses later saw her riding in a Volkswagen Bug.
Oh.
Then on October the 11th, 1974... he approached Rhonda Stapley. Stapley was a first-year pharmacy student waiting for a bus that was going to take her back to the University of Utah. He offered to give her a ride in his Volkswagen. He took her to Big Cottonwood Canyon, where he repeatedly raped her and strangled her. And the only reason she got away is that he turned his back on her, and it gave her a chance to run. And she ran and jumped in a nearby river. But instead of contacting authorities, she hid her story for nearly 40 years.
Why?
She was afraid of being blamed and ridiculed.
She
was raped multiple times. And I mean, you can hear it. Well, why'd you get in the car?
Yeah.
What were you wearing?
What were you wearing?
What did you say? Mm. You know?
Ugh.
Okay. So she didn't tell anyone until 2011. And she later told a reporter, I was afraid that people would treat me differently if they knew what happened. She wanted to put it behind her. She just really wanted to just pretend it never happened.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. On October the 18th, 1974, Melissa Ann Smith, age 17, vanished. She was the daughter of a police chief. She disappeared after meeting a friend at a pizza parlor. She was going to walk home, pick up some clothes, and then go back to the friend's house for a slumber party, but she never made it home. Her body was found 9 days later in Summit Park in the mountains of Salt Lake City.
Mm.
On Halloween of 1974, 17-year-old Laura Ann Aim disappeared after leaving a cafe Her family didn't realize she was missing for another few days. I'm not really sure how that happens, but maybe they thought she was with a friend or something. And then hikers found her frozen body in the mountains about a month later.
That was still during a period of time where parents really didn't watch their
kids. They really didn't. You're talking about the 70s. It's like, in the 80s, she's 17.
Because we were a part of that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, in the 70s, too.
Well, she's 17, so, you know, she's doing whatever.
You're an adult.
Yeah.
1974.
Yeah, where's my 17? Rent check?
Mm-hmm. You paying somebody rent.
Yeah. All right. November the 8th, 1974, posing as a police officer named Rosalind, he approached Carol DeRanche. I think that's how you say her last name. If it's not, I'm sorry. At the Fashion Place Mall in Murray, Utah. He told this 18-year-old girl that her car had been broken into and she needed to go to the police station with him. So she gets in the car with him, quickly noticed that something was wrong. They didn't drive to the police station, and his
And he was in a Volkswagen Bug.
Bug. And how did he know it was her car? Really? Yeah. I mean, like, I'm thinking.
Wait, why do you gotta, this isn't a police car. I'm undercover. You're in a uniform. This isn't adding up.
Nothing is making sense
smart
here.
Smart enough to take care of myself at 17, but.
And we're not driving to the police station. Yeah. And then his friendly demeanor is going to shift. He's going to turn cold, and he's not going to say anything. Mm-hmm. So he's in the zone at that point. And when she asked him what he was doing, he wouldn't answer her. He handcuffed her and threatened her with a gun. She did end up breaking out of the car and ran. A couple driving nearby picked her up and took her to the police station. And she couldn't find any of, quote, Rosalind's face in any of their mugshots or any of the police. She's like, Officer Rosalind. No, we don't have one of those. There's not an Officer Rosalind.
Yeah.
But they didn't really have any mugshots of Bundy at the time because he was still
loose. Was that sketch out there at this time? No.
The sketch. Well, we're now in Utah, so the sketch is back in Washington.
Yeah. This is before fax machines.
Yeah. This is he's transferred, so now he's got a whole new hunting ground.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah. A few hours later, on that same day, he approached 17-year-old Debbie Kent after a performance of a high school play in Bountiful, Utah. Her parents refused to turn off their home's porch light since she disappeared.
Oh, to this day, it's on.
I mean, if they're still around, they're not.
Wow.
On January the 12th, 1975, he kidnapped 23-year-old Karen Campbell in a hotel in Aspen, Colorado. The registered nurse was in town for a medical convention. She left her fiancé and his children in the lobby. She went to grab a magazine from her room, and he abducted her. Her nude body was found a month later next to a dirt road just outside the resort. And according to the coroner's report, she had been killed by blows to her head from a blunt instrument that left distinctive linear grooved impressions in her skull. Her assailant had slit her left earlobe, and her body also had deep cuts from a sharp weapon. So this is like this is what you see in a lot of the movies where the woman's walking down the long hallway in the resort, and here comes a man in a sling, and, you know, and he's fumbling with his key, and he can't get in his room, and... You know, and she stops to help, and over the head.
He used the arm sling
a lot. All right. On March 15th, 1975, Julie Cunningham, a 26-year-old Colorado ski instructor, went to meet her roommate at a local bar. Bundy approached her and pretended to ask for help with his crutches before kidnapping her. He asked her to help carry his ski boots to his car. And that's where he knocked her over the head, handcuffed her before sexually assaulting her at a secondary site near Rifle, Colorado. Weeks later, he made the 6-hour drive from Salt Lake City to revisit her remains. And this is something that he said he would do. He would go back and spend time with the bodies if he could.
And he'd just lay them out, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't bury them or cover them up or anything.
Not usually, no. He would
just find a desolate area somewhere.
Yeah, and he would just go spend time with them. And sometimes he would rape them again or
while they were dead?
You know. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
he did that a lot. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So he just. I really. He didn't really offer any insight why he would do that. He just.
I don't think he knew. He just did it.
He just wanted to go back and visit.
Yeah.
And he did.
Wow.
On April 6, 1975, after a fight with her husband in Grand Junction, Colorado, 24-year-old Denise Oliverson jumped on her bike and headed for her parents' house, but she never made it. They later found her bicycle somewhere in the area near a viaduct. And Bundy abducted her, killed her in his car near the Utah state line, and dumped her body in the Colorado River.
Oh.
So there was really no rhyme or reason if he would dump somebody in the river or if he would throw one
whatever
girl.
Whatever was convenient. A desolate area convenient. There's a river. That's fine.
Yeah. One girl, he claimed to have burnt her skull in the fireplace of the woman's home he was currently dating. Like, burn it. I mean, just to destroy the evidence. I don't know.
Yeah.
There was...
Well, I mean, but why would he destroy evidence if he's just tossing bodies out?
Yeah, it doesn't make
crazy.
Sense.
Well, he was crazy anyway.
I think so, and I don't think he could really explain why he did everything.
I agree.
I would say he was an organized criminal because he had a plan.
Yeah.
And once you got in that V-dub, the door handle didn't open.
Oh,
there was
really?
No door handle. Like, you... You know,
Edmund Kemper did that too.
Mm-hmm.
He had the door rigged
where you couldn't get out. Once you were in, you know, the one girl, it probably after the one girl escaped, the Durant girl, he probably fixed it then.
Yep.
But so I would say he was organized, but he seemed to be very unorganized afterward.
Yeah.
He didn't have a specific ritual every time after every kill. So, all right. So, on May 6, Bundy parked outside the Alameda Junior High School. This was in Idaho. Pocatello?
Pocatello.
Pocatello, Idaho. After seeing 12-year-old Lynette Dawn Culver walking along by herself, he lured her into his vehicle before driving her to his hotel room. He then raped Culver and drowned her in the bathtub and disposed her body in the Snake River. 12.
12, gosh.
June 28th, 1975, Susan Curtis, 15, disappeared from a college campus. Bundy abducted her as she left a Mormon youth conference at Brigham Young University. She lived in the same neighborhood and attended the same school as Debbie Kent, the one whose parents left the light on.
Oh, God.
All right. In August of 1975, during a routine traffic stop, police discovered masks, handcuffs, and blunt weapons in Bundy's car.
They just stumbled on him.
He was stopped for speeding.
Wow.
Suspicious, but lacking evidence, they placed him under surveillance. They tracked down his Volkswagen, which he had sold to a teenage boy, and found physical evidence tying him to several of the missing women. Can you imagine being this teenage boy, and they're like, look at all this we found in your car.
Gosh.
Like, holy crap.
Do you think he still drove it?
I don't know. Now, the car is in a museum now.
Really?
The actual bug is, I don't know what museum. It's in one of those crime museums.
There's a crime. Now, the mob museum in Las Vegas, probably not there, but there are other crime museums. And I'm trying to remember which museum Bonnie and Clyde's car is in because it is in a museum somewhere. So maybe the same one.
Maybe.
But
it's
remember.
In a crime museum somewhere, the actual Volkswagen.
Hmm.
All right, so, okay. They bring him into custody. His victim, Carol DeRanche, identified him from a lineup on October 2nd, 1975. Okay. So we got him.
We got him.
Okay.
We think.
Bundy was convicted for the DeRanche kidnapping and sentenced in June of 1976. He escaped a year later by jumping out of a second-story courthouse window. What he would do is he would make buddies. He would become buddies with the guard.
Yeah.
And he talked him into, he said he was going to go and use the phone up there. I need to use the phone. And the guard was like, sure, Ted. Yeah. You know, go ahead. And so while he's up there using the phone, as the guard is not watching him, he jumps out the window.
Ugh.
Okay. He was recaptured 6 days later. He hid up in the mountains for a while, and then they finally got him. And then he escaped prison by cutting through a hole in the ceiling on December 30th, 1977.
What kind of prison was this? The gingerbread prison?
I don't know.
I mean,
I think it was.
He lost
there was
weight.
There was a drop ceiling, mm-hmm. and he climbed up in this drop ceiling.
Yeah.
Right.
And then on through, and then out another room,
yeah.
out down into another room. He figured out how much weight he needed to lose to fit through, and he did, and he got out. Okay. So that was December 30th, 1977. Are we ready for Florida?
Oh, yeah. Here
All
comes
right.
Florida.
January 15th, 1978.
Oh, so he stayed out for a while after
oh,
that.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah. He went to Florida State University's Chi Omega sorority house.
Is it that many more?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
All right. So he breaks out on December 30th. By January 15th, he's in Florida. At the Chi Omega house, Florida State.
He's just trying to kill as many people as he can before he gets picked back up.
Apparently. Several young students are sleeping in the sorority house. He sneaks into the bedroom of 21-year-old Margaret Bowman. He bludgeons her to death with a piece of firewood. He then goes to the room of Lisa Levy, age 20. He beat her, strangled her, tore off one of her nipples, bit deeply into her left buttock and raped her with a bottle of hairspray.
That sounded like that current case.
Mm-hmm. Bundy went to attack Bowman and Levy's housemates, Karen Chandler and Kathleen Kleiner. Kleiner wakes up to see this, what she called a black mass, standing over her, sees him lift something over his head and slam it down on top of her. And, she kind of blacks out. Then some headlights flash through the windows because one of the sorority sisters, Nita Neary, just arrived home and scared Bundy away. So those last two girls survived. The yeah. first two were dead. The last two Ugh. Survived. And then Neary's going to later on provide eyewitness testimony against him because she sees him running from the sorority house. Both of the girls that survived did have permanent injuries, physically and definitely mentally. But one of them was so bad that the paramedics told her that she had been shot in the face.
And she'd just been hit.
Hit in the face, yeah. So then he breaks into a nearby apartment, still not done on this night.
Yeah.
21-year-old FSU student Cheryl Thomas. She escaped because her neighbor heard a noise, but she did suffer permanent deafness, and it ended her dance career because he had beaten her. And,
right.
Yeah.
So he needed a fix. I mean, how long had it been before then?
Since he had killed somebody?
It'd
been
what it was.
Several months because he had been incarcerated.
Yeah, so he was just desperate to get a fix.
Right, and he didn't kill anybody when he escaped the first time and was up in the mountains or that we know of.
You're right.
He was gone 6 days, and then they finally... Yeah. He almost starved to death, which would have been convenient if he had just done that. Mm-hmm. But they picked him back up, and then he escaped. Mm-hmm. Okay. Gosh, there's so many notes. Where am I at? All right. Ted Bundy killed one last time, murdering 12-year-old Kimberly Leach. He kidnapped her around her school in Lake City, Florida, on February the 9th, 1978. 2 months later, her body was found 35 miles away in the Suwannee River State Park. So he did kill two 12-year-olds.
I thought it was, after he escaped the second time, I thought he killed three more people.
It's
but
four.
I thought they were all, was it four?
Mm-hmm. No, it was three. You're right. There was two at the sorority house.
Yeah. I was thinking he killed three at the sorority house and that was it. But I thought it was three.
Yeah.
Wow.
So a police officer, David Lee, noticed a Volkswagen Beetle driving erratically on February 15th.
Wait,
and
but he still
pulled
got
him
this
over.
Car?
So he's bought another Volkswagen.
It was stolen. They discovered when he ran everything that it's a stolen vehicle.
He just liked a Beetle.
He did. And when he figured out the car was stolen, he also found several IDs of women in his possession.
His
and
trophies.
So then they arrested him. So he was... by chance, arrested by traffic stops.
Wow.
His arrest led to his conviction and death sentence. Mm-hmm. And while on death row, Bundy had many psychiatric evaluations. He was first diagnosed with bipolar and multiple personality. That was eventually chunked. And they landed on what's now known as antisocial personality disorder, mm-hmm. or psychopath, sociopath. Yeah.
I like psychopath.
Yeah.
He did give a final interview, and it was videoed, and I did have to watch this in one of my abnormal psych classes.
Right.
And what I saw was he could talk about these things.
Nonchalant.
Like, what do you have for breakfast? He could sit there, and he could, but then he would get on a soapbox and talk about porno. And he would blame porno and say, it's bad. We need to get rid of porno. It's the root of all evil. It's what made me into the monster that I was.
You're not watching snuff films. I mean, they don't kill people in...
I know. Yeah. And he did prefer the violent porno flicks to by his own admission. But that's what he kept blaming was porno. And people say he does... have remorse or express remorse for his last victim, the 12-year-old, the second 12-year-old.
Right.
I didn't really see it in the interview. I mean, to me, it looked like he was just trying to put on a show. I mean, he knows he's about to be executed. I mean
who cares
matter?
Anyway? Get rid of this guy.
Yeah, I don't really care if you're sorry or not. You don't need to be out and about, obviously.
Well, it was the insight that they got from these interviews that probably led to John Douglas starting the behavioral sciences unit. Everybody's seen Mindhunter on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
And it was what it was. It was a series. They would go and sit down and interview these serial killers to try and figure out how their mind worked so that they could come up with a profile and think about what a narrow box most of these serial killers fit into.
Yeah.
You know, white guy in his late 20s to early 30s, loner, you know, check.
Yeah. He like I said, he did several interviews.
Yeah.
I forgot where I was going with this. Well, oh, he tried to help, quote, them find the Green River Killer.
Okay.
You know, he kept saying that he, you know, might have some knowledge or could help them. I don't think Ted ever really provided anything helpful. I think he was just trying to postpone the inevitable, which is his execution.
So it's like Silence of the Lamb. Probably, maybe where that movie was.
He tried to be, you know,
in the movie when Buffalo Bill kidnaps the senator's daughter.
Yeah.
He lures her to the van because he's got his arm in a cast,
and he needs help.
Getting the couch into the van.
Yeah, they do take a lot of. Yeah. Ted Liberty.
Buffalo Bill, is that right? That was the...
Yeah,
Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
Good Lord, his voice was terrifying.
Lotion on its skin.
Oh my gosh. that's awful.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Bundy rejected his last meal and was executed in the Rayford electric chair at 7:16 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday, January 24th, 1989. His last words were directed at his attorney, Jim Coleman, and Methodist minister Fred Lawrence. He said, Jim and Fred, I'd like you to give my love to my family and friends. Now, Ted did have a family. He was married and did have a child after he was on death row.
Yeah, I have heard that. That's just some weird
That's stuff. A whole nother fascination for me. These women that will marry men on death row.
Yeah.
And I don't even know, I guess you... I mean, they had a kid together.
Well,
he's got a daughter.
Visits, I guess.
I guess they allow. Why would you allow a conjugal visit to death row inmate?
I don't know.
I don't know the law. And I don't know if it was actually allowed, if it just was something that, you know, happened. Because, like I said, Ted was still very charming.
Isn't he kind of the poster child for the death penalty?
Yes.
I mean, like, if you don't agree with the death penalty, you have to agree with that one.
Yeah.
You have to.
I mean,
you know, and then ironically, he has a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So. He is a father
now,
of a daughter.
Where's she? I mean, I guess she keeps out of the spotlight, right?
I don't know.
I bet she changed her name.
She probably did, and I purposely didn't try to, like...
Yeah, but somebody has.
Somebody has. But you know, people haven't
seen her and don't know who she is, and that means she's done a really good job of hiding.
Yeah, and I hope she does. I hope she has a really good life.
I bet all these internet sleuths, when Ted Bundy came back around...
Oh, gosh.
Like,
you know, when it cycled back around.
When they started the movies.
Yeah.
The anniversaries.
I bet you the worst of the worst were looking for her.
I'm sure. And can you imagine if you are her? Can you imagine if your father is this person?
Well, you got to think every day, am I this person?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Half of my DNA is his.
Like you step on a roach and you're like, oh, no.
That's terrifying.
It started.
Yeah.
Am I gonna turn into this?
What's next?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? I mean, she may have killed herself. I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Wouldn't you? I mean, that would be heavy to bear.
I hope that wherever she is, she has a full and wonderful life of peace.
Yeah, sure.
I hope that for her. But not everybody hopes that for her. I mean, you know, there's probably a lot of people that would love to
kill her and
exactly.
Eye for an eye.
Maybe. Exactly. Yeah.
The sins of her father, not hers.
Not hers. And the mother, her mother, you know, always, she believed in Ted's innocence.
Well, that happens a lot, let me tell you.
Whatever you got to tell yourself. I mean, you know, I don't know.
I've sat right here in this office and told grandmothers are the worst. Grandmothers who are raising children because their children are drug addicts. It nearly always leads to me sitting on the other side of a desk telling somebody eventually, I'm not taking any more of your money.
Right.
Your grandson.
Right.
Is a piece.
He did it.
Needs to go to jail.
Yeah. He needs to go to jail.
Right.
Now, look, that's not, I'm a lawyer. You know, I get people out of jail. Mm-hmm. You know, they call me Moses down.
Yeah, I've heard.
Leading them from bondage.
So you're a defense attorney and a good one.
I mean, no.
Well, sure, why not?
Let's leave it at he's an attorney.
But at some point, even I have to realize I'm not on board with this anymore.
Right. So are you saying, would you defend Ted Bundy?
No.
You would have never been his lawyer.
Let me tell you what happened to me one time when I was, do we have time for this?
Absolutely.
All the time in the world.
When I was taking appointed cases and, you know, you got to kind of take the good with the bad. And I got appointed to a child molester, an actual, just, the worst.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Young children.
Yeah.
Making a video.
Oh, my gosh.
Together.
The worst.
The worst.
Person in the
evil.
The
worst.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we were in the DA's office, and the DA, you know, was like, hey, this is disturbing, but here's the pictures he had on his computer.
Oh, my gosh. Like stuff you can never unsee.
Like a foot thick.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's like, you know, you probably need to look at these. And I was thinking, oh, God. I opened the file in the top one.
Mm.
It wasn't bad.
Okay.
It's two kids standing there.
Oh, no, Shane.
Looking, you know, just not afraid, like, defeated. Looking like beat dogs.
Oh,
you
my God. Just
defeated. Not scared. Just no expression.
Oh, that's sickening.
Oh, and I closed it and I slid it back and I said, I'm out of this.
Yep.
And he was like, well, you got appointed to it. You need to. I said, no. And I called the judge. I said, I'm not doing it.
I'm not doing it.
And the judge said, well, Shane, you know, it's your job. And I'm like, no, this isn't my job.
Good for you.
No, I just couldn't do it.
That's good.
It wasn't morals as much as it was. I was not going to look at those pictures.
And do you want to, what a gross, you don't even want to sit by somebody like
no.
that. I don't want your taint on me.
Do you know what happened to the guy?
I do. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it was
slam dunk.
But, you know, it's. Everybody deserves the right to an attorney.
Well, sure.
Everybody.
Yeah.
That's what people
and
don't
a fair trial and defense.
About
yeah.
You know, why would you take that case? Well, you know, somebody's got to take it.
Right. We've talked about this with Katie on here.
Somebody's got to take it. You have to be represented or the conviction will never stick.
Right.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
If nobody represents you, how can they have a trial?
Mm-hmm.
They can't. You can't be forced to represent yourself.
Right.
So. I probably made the wrong move. I've only turned down a couple of those, but there's just certain things I can't stomach.
Yeah, but you know your limits, and when this was going to be past that.
And hey, you know what? Congratulations to lawyers who can do that.
Yeah.
And really look past it hey, this is my job, and this is what I have to do. But
don't think bad about them either.
And I have represented a lot of people who were, you know, otherwise not great people, but I can't.
Right. Mm. I get it.
They tried to give me one more, and I was like, no.
Not happening.
If I have to do this, then I'll just take my name off the appointment. Yeah.
That's awful. I can't imagine. Ugh.
And what they do with that, though, is they hit people like Katie, who's about to graduate, and get their law degree, and they're like, okay, now, here you go.
You got to do this.
Here's the ones nobody wants. And you know, now you're a new lawyer doing that. And then you get into the situation like what was that show that just came on that was so good about the it was a murder site at a real rural place, and they'd found the bones in the burn pit, and then
making a murderer
making a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
yeah I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, I know
so hard about what the name of it was.
I know where I was going with that because I feel like I was in the minority at the time. I was thinking, this guy did this.
Yeah.
Was I the... Yeah. I mean...
Oh, my point was is that, you know...
I didn't think he did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
Oh.
I don't know what point was, but...
Somebody had to represent him.
Well, oh, that's right. Yeah. I mean, something like that. You know, somebody had to represent him, and obviously they did a good job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he was still convicted, but it was still questioned. And
right. Those documentaries are very, they're propaganda, and are very sided, yeah. One-sided, and they're very good at what they do.
They're really
they
good
will
at
make
what
you kind of question, but I'm thinking, no. I mean, yeah. I know he went to jail and didn't do the yeah. attack, the
right.
assault,
yeah.
and that was proven. Mm. So he did that one.
Yeah.
And that's my opinion.
I came around.
You can put together a series of montage events and interviews and make anybody look innocent if you're controlling.
Correct.
Yeah. Especially
or
the opposite.
If you leave out the calls to his family where he's threatening them and cussing them and saying, you better do this, you better talk to these documentary people, you better do, you know.
Yeah.
And when those got released, I was like, well, dang, I don't feel so bad about myself.
I think we ought to change the name of the Netflix shows to Dramamentaries.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Because they're trying to, but it's a business. I mean, it's like any entertainment business. If you put out just exactly what happened, most of the time that's boring.
Right.
They're not boring, but, you know, it's
reading court documents,
one-sided, so why would you, you know, it's like...
Right. Anyway. Reading court documents and court notes is boring.
Yeah.
Oh, when I do jury trials, the first thing I tell a jury is, this is not what you think.
Right.
So what's about to happen here is not...
It's not what you've seen on television.
What you've seen on television.
Right. Yeah. There's no aha moment. There's no, it doesn't you know,
happen.
All that. Yeah.
I think I've had one in my life.
Ugh.
One.
With the aha moment?
In 25 years.
Right.
Oh, darn. and you're a pretty good showman, Shane. And I say pretty good. You're a very good
there's
showman.
There's not a lot of magic
to it.
So
I could see you being good in court doing that.
Yeah.
But still, you can only do so
well. Yeah, I can just see him with the big reveal, like the manila envelope, and he whips out the photo. Aha!
Yeah. Or like the Matlock things where they'd admit to it on the stand. It wasn't me.
I did it. Yeah.
Or these shows you watch, and you know, you just don't have to push hard. Hey, weren't you there?
I was.
He deserved it.
Right.
That son of a bitch deserved it.
And I'd do it again.
Well, man, you just asked him what his name was. Hey, buddy, what's your name? I killed him. I did it. I'd do it again.
Oh,
you want to hear my aha moment?
Yeah, let's hear
it. Do we have time for it?
Let me say this and put Ted Bundy to rest, and then I want to hear it.
Yeah,
it's a great story.
All right, so I said he was executed January 24th, 1989. After this happened, hundreds of people sang, danced, and set off fireworks in a pasture across from the prison as the execution was carried out. And then they all cheered again as the white hearse containing his corpse left the prison.
Yeah.
If anybody ever deserved it, it was Ted Bundy.
They had signs. I remember seeing the signs on the documentaries and stuff that says, Tuesday is Friday.
Oh,
F-R-I.
Yeah. Wow. F-R-Y-D-A-Y.
F-R-Y-Day. Friday. Okay. And then he was cremated in Gainesville, and his ashes were scattered at an undisclosed location in the Cascade Range of Washington State.
I was hoping for a landfill.
In accordance with his will. I don't feel like... They should get to say that.
No,
I don't give a crap where you want your ashes.
Those should have been spread in a dumpster behind the station.
For Oof. Real.
Yeah. He did...
Unceremoniously.
Right. He did confess to murdering 30 women.
Wow.
But in other interviews, he confessed to more.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Well, and there's
Ted's a liar.
The 8-year-old back in the 60s.
Possibly the 61 murder.
Yeah.
Considering his heinous crimes, the judge who presided over Bundy's case summed up the killer by saying, extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile. That's the name of the Zac Efron flick, is the extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile.
Wow.
Yeah. And so there you are. There are 1 million, that's probably exaggeration, books, movies,
hundreds.
And films,
yeah,
and television shows and everything on Ted Bundy. I'm not putting all that on my references. Google it yourself.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what, though? This is the first time I've ever heard the whole story.
Oh, sweet. No, we learned something new today. Yeah. Yeah, nice.
I just can't watch stuff like that.
It's really disturbing, and Ted Bundy is disturbing. So I threw this together really quickly. And
well,
did
you did a good job.
As 199, so I didn't have to spend a lot of time on him. Yeah. And then I'm moving on to 200. So
man,
there you go, Ted.
Awesome.
I'm halfway finished with it. I'm halfway finished with episode 200. You guys will get it by Wednesday.
Perfect.
When folks are out there listening to this episode, you guys will have episode 200 in your hands.
Right.
Wow.
All right, Shane, I want to hear your aha moment.
My aha moment, and these are all local people, so I'm probably going to get in trouble for this. But I'm not going to mention names, but this is
good.
Kind of story that doesn't need names mentioned. If it's you and you're hearing this, you're going, oh.
Are we all going to go aha because we're going to figure out who it is?
Just put a target on all our backs.
No. Okay. Right. I had a pretty vanilla kind of case. It was a second marriage situation. I was representing the wife. Another local lawyer was representing the husband.
Okay.
And they were getting divorced, but the husband had been married previously.
Okay.
My client was telling me, you know, he was abusive and this and that. And she said, well, I know, I was like, how are we going to prove this? Did you make any report? Or, no. It was as typically as women do, is unfortunate.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this and you are being abused, report it.
Please do.
Document it.
Please report it.
Report it.
He's not going to get better.
No, you're not going to change him.
You're not going to change him.
Not going to happen.
That's at my own financial demise right there. I mean,
well, sure.
I don't want that case. I don't want to be talking to you in that manner here. I'd like to see it over Easy Street having a nice life. Anyway, but so she's like, no. And he said, well, I know that he'd been roughing up his ex-wife. I know that. Oh, can we get her to testify? Well, we tried that. He's like, no. I'll tell you the story, but I'm not coming up. I'm not doing that. I'm not, you know.
Didn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah, just scared. So we really didn't have a lot to go on. And we went into court that day, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to throw it. I'm just going to throw it at him, you know. It was like, well, sir, you've abused your ex-wife. You've hit her before, haven't you?
He didn't know she wasn't going to come and testify.
No, that's the Matlock moment.
Oh.
That's the papers that you're reading.
I got you.
Isn't it true that you wrote some text to say this and this and this? And they're like, oh, what's in the papers you're holding?
What's on that? Yeah.
Anyway, so, no, he didn't know, but he just immediately, it was weird. Every time that he talked, he leaned up into the microphone and did this. And so he went, yes, I have. And I went, oh, okay.
He aha'd you.
Well, okay. And then we were off to the races, and it was a grueling, grueling race.
Because you had the information.
Oh, God. Now I was it's a field day now.
Could you not have?
Well, why did you hit her? I don't know. You don't know why you hit her? Why would you hit somebody? You got to know why you hit somebody. Well, yeah. I don't know why.
Let me ask a dumb question.
Like, hold on. Let me finish this. And so I was, then I'd say, he had to have been angry. No, I wasn't angry. You hit her, but you weren't angry. No, I wasn't angry at all. I said, oh, so you were teaching her a lesson. Well, I mean, I guess. Okay. What kind of lessons were you teaching her? Well, I don't know. Probably to shut up, right? you don't know. Well, you knew all of it. That's
fantastic.
That was 45 minutes.
I love it.
Oh, I mean, just.
How bad does he hate you?
Oh, hisses at me. Really?
Like
seriously.
Steel hates your guts.
Well, do that. Oh, yeah.
Spits when somebody says your name.
Somehow it's your fault that he is
a
serial abuser.
Jerk.
Not really. A nice guy otherwise.
Oh,
like
really? A
public,
nice guy?
Yes.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm not going to say your name if you're listening. So, But you know who you are.
Well, if you're hitting women, stop being an ass.
You don't forget this day.
Yeah. All right.
My dumb question was, he had to say yes before you could bring that up, right? If he'd said no,
I was stuck.
You were stuck.
If he'd have said no, then...
I've never done that.
Okay. No further questions.
I mean, you just throw it up and see if anybody swings at it.
Right. And he went swinging.
Yes, I have.
I'm like, okay. Well, I set my pad down. I'm like,
holy crap.
I didn't think I was going to get
Roll
to do
my
this
sleeves
today.
Up. Let's get this done.
Let's do it. Let me see if I can piss this guy off.
I turn into a different person in court. Mm-hmm. And it's a very assholish person.
I've seen that sure. guy.
And so I've literally told the officers at the front, like, to watch me walk out and walk to my office because I was afraid I'm going to get shot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I really don't clear up with what I just get on a roll.
Yeah.
And then I walk out and think, oh, no.
What have I done?
I'm going to get shot. I've had people drive by and moon me, honk, horn, shoot, bucket. I mean, you know, I'm like, all right.
Goodness. Moon you? That'll show him.
Yeah, my ass was hanging out of a window one time.
Take a look at my butt.
So if you're out there today working your way through law school, you have that to look forward to if you want
to
become a defense attorney.
That's not the story, though. Here's the story.
Oh.
That's not the aha thing.
Okay. All right. Okay.
What the hell did you tell that for?
Well, because I told you that to tell you this.
Okay. Well, that was fun.
So,
all right.
You know, an hour later, I don't know. I spit roasted. I sat down. Oh, my client tapped me on the leg, like, good job.
Nice. She was like, I did it.
Nice.
I got the best lawyer.
Yeah. So then the next witness that the other lawyer called, was this guy's mom.
Oh.
And I waited there like it was Christmas Eve.
Oh, no.
Just
not the mom.
Brimming with excitement. I had to have been like looking like, oh, when are you going to get done? When are you going to get done? When's my turn?
Not the mom.
Oh, nothing but good. Nothing but sunshine and rainbows coming out of mom.
Of course.
This
That's
is what reminded
mom.
Me of the mom.
Yeah.
You know, the
yeah.
mom. And oh, my God. I didn't even have to write down questions. I was like, okay. Counselor, your turn. Oh, thank you.
Your chair's squeaking like you're getting up so fast.
So, Miss So-and-so, you may not know this because witnesses don't sit in the courtroom by law during the testimony, but your son just admitted to hitting his ex-wife a few times because not out of anger, but to teach her a lesson because he wanted to shut up.
Oh.
And she went, what? And I'm like, yeah. Did he learn that from you? And she went, he sure the hell didn't.
Oh, mom!
Like, Did you do that?
She is like turned on him.
Now she's my witness.
Oh,
like, he did. I said, let me tell you what happened, and then we recounted his whole thing.
So you told his mom on it.
Oh, I did.
Fucking tattletale.
Are you talking about my witness now?
Yeah.
Oh, my witness really made the case.
And
no.
She
what
lost
would you
it
do
on him.
If your husband, I'd hit him with a frying pan. I wouldn't.
She said I'd have.
So he didn't get
belt.
That from. No, sir, he did not.
Ooh, now mom is.
Wow.
Claws are out. Oh my gosh. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Mom has turned on him.
All right. Now, are we supposed to pretend like mom never knew any of that?
I told you that to tell you this.
Oh, there's more.
So that's a winner, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm hoping.
Well, my client had some minor drug problems, like marijuana.
Sure.
And so it caused her to not get like custody that she wanted the first time that they were in there. It wasn't a divorce. It was a custody case to get her custody.
Mm-hmm.
They were already. So the judge was like, all right. I mean, you know, I won that.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay. He said, well, Ms. So-and-so, I mean, you know, I noticed this is why you didn't have full custody anyway. So just, and we'd already talked about this. I was like, he's going to ask you to take a drug test no matter what. It's like, it's no problem.
Oh, I think I've heard this story before.
And so I was like, okay. Yeah. I said, go over there and take your drug test. Come back and get your kids. Exactly what it was. Okay. Be back in a minute. All right.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Really?
Well, she had a pill bottle of urine up inside of her.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm assuming wasn't hers.
Probably not.
Yeah.
And it dropped out during the.
Great.
Then they took a real sample.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she came back over with her head hung down. I was watching her walk back across the street. She had her head hung down, and I thought, oh, no. Oh, no.
Right.
So she walks in. I said, what happened? What'd she tell me? I said, God. Well, you got to report that to the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's not happy with it.
No.
As he's not happy with it, the results come in negative.
For what? Everything?
Yeah.
What the crap?
I'll be damned.
So
I forgot that
so
part.
So what happened?
He kept the kids with the dad.
You're kidding.
What?
Because she tried to fake a drug test, so she was obviously still on drugs.
Even though the test came back negative.
Loser. That's why somebody comes in here and says, what's your win-loss percentage? I said, I thought I was going to win all of them.
Well,
I mean,
holy
crap. I don't
so,
keep up with that.
So it's but the dad wasn't abusing the kids?
No.
Never? So, okay. So I guess if you're the judge, you're looking at...
Well, wait a damn minute. If I'm... What judge sends kids back to an abusive
well,
husband?
It wasn't like this guy was like just a serial abuser. I think he had... I am not.
No.
I'm not saying that what he did. But it was like he just, out of anger, I think he hit her a couple of times.
He would get angry and just like frustrated.
Unacceptable.
No, unacceptable.
No, absolutely.
But when
I know.
You're a judge and you're trying
absolutely.
To figure out where to put these kids.
But it wasn't like we barely had the evidence for that. I mean, if he hadn't, like I said, if he had admitted to it, we'd have never had anything.
Mm-hmm.
But he probably thought that she was sitting in the other room. And he wasn't really rough on my client a lot. When they were married, it never even really come up. But he knocked her around a little bit.
Okay.
And they'd already got divorced. And,
yeah.
But he...
How did he get the kids to begin with?
I'm sorry.
Her
because
use?
Of her drug abuse.
Drug use. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's not...
Uh-oh.
I messed the story up.
Uh-oh.
They got divorced, and then he remarried this other girl, and then they got divorced. And when they got divorced, she started talking to the... ex-wife, which is my client. That's what
they started
happened.
Sharing stories.
Back.
Okay, I got
and
you.
And then she was like, okay, I'm going to get my kids back.
Okay.
You know, because he's roughing me up too. Now we got witnesses and all this stuff. But no, that was a loser. So I don't win-loss percentage doesn't mean a lot because I don't really dictate much of what goes on. I put on a show.
Yeah.
But in the end, I mean, you really got the facts you got.
Yeah.
There's not any... smoking guns, except for them.
And then you've got the judge, especially because most of the time it's the judge, right? It's
and
not
they
a jury
see this
or
every day. You
and
can't
they're
trick
just
the judge.
Yeah, they're just looking, and they're So then they have to make a decision.
And clients always say, "Well, I want to bring up that he sends the kids back in clothes that aren't clean." Well, the judge don't care about it. You know, they never believe that. You don't want kids to be dressed properly. Well, you don't feed them nothing but hamburgers. Well, I mean, you know, that's not great, but it's not going to change custody.
But you're feeding them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All day of hamburgers.
Oh, no.
I don't, I mean.
See,
you know,
this is just reason number 10 million that I didn't go into law or being a judge or anything.
Is it
it's just
to,
not a place for me.
Is it too late to talk Katie out of her law degree?
No, it is not. Have y'all seen that meme? Of Leonardo DiCaprio from Django that gets used a lot, where he's got a drink in his hand and he's going,
he's got that grin
little,
on his face.
That little sly, I got you, grin.
Face.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that meme gets used a lot with different stuff. I'm going to make a recreation of that over at the corner of the bar when she passes her bar exam.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be me holding a drink doing that face, and it's going to say, y'all thought she was gold digging.
That's fantastic.
And then somebody else, when I was telling that story, when they said, what are you going to do if she leaves you after that? And I said, I'm going to kill her.
Oh, no.
And Shane will end up on his own podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk about him. Yeah.
And I'm going to let the state take care of me.
All right, guys. Well, it has been a fantastic 199th episode of True Crime on Easy Street. Shane Givens.
Yeah, Shane, thank you for joining us.
You did all right.
Things
today.
That Katie is not going to be happy with, so.
Yeah.
But she controls the editing.
She will cut it out in editing.
Yeah, if there are any choppy breaks when you listen to this out there, folks, it's because she cut out a bunch of funny shit that Shane said today.
Yeah. And if you're somebody that I was just talking about, I've already blocked you.
All right, guys, say something nice about us on your podcast platform of choice. We'd love for you to listen to us on Spotify. Leave us a 5-star review. Send us an email to
truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com.
I almost did the wrong one. Shane's got a comedy show coming up at Easy Street this coming Friday, 2 days from now as you listen on March the 7th. So check that out on their Facebook page. Check out our Facebook page.
Yep.
And we will see you next week for episode number 200. Is that it, guys? Are we done?
We're done.
Good night, everybody.